You are listening to Expanding Horizons, the podcast of the Unitarian Church of South Australia, a home of progressive spirituality and free religious thought and action since 1854. Views expressed in these podcasts are those of the speaker and are not intended to represent the position of the church itself or of the worldwide Unitarian Universalist movement. For more information, visit unitariansa.org.au. This is a reading from Paige Getty from her book, The Seven Principles in Word and Worship. The fourth of our seven principles, the free and responsible search for truth and meaning, is a loaded one. It's tempting to focus on the freedom part or the search part without looking at the principle in its entirety. Without responsibility, free search for truth and meaning is potentially narcissistic and destructive. It is our sense of responsibility that calls us to consider our relationships within the web of existence and the consequences of our beliefs, which, if worth anything, will lead to action. Too often we relinquish this responsibility in our insistence on maintaining our so-called freedom. Most remarkably, we seem to have convinced ourselves that freedom implies an affirmation of rampant individualism, that whatever I have convinced myself is true in my mind and heart is justifiable and legitimate regardless of my actions. It is evidenced in rampant sectarianism, too, as we deepen the chasms that separate us and them, rather than acknowledge their perspective, though different, often has worth and validity. In our own spiritual quests, we dismiss certain religious perspectives as meaningless because they are too traditional or not traditional enough. If we are to actively affirm and promote a free and responsible search for truth and meaning, we must be deliberate and diligent in our living. We must be willing to act on truth and meaning, to evolve in word and deed, to live our convictions. In this effort, I'm inspired by the admonition of St. Francis of Assisi, preach the gospel at all times. If necessary, use words. In this 21st century, we are all too often skillful disputants at the expense of holy living. We seem more interested in being right than in doing right. But when we pause long enough to reflect on what it might mean to be a holy liver, we have to wonder how far these disputes will carry us. What comfort does a strong, self-righteous perspective bring in a time of fear and despair? When face-to-face with our own family's mortality, what kind of truth and meaning makes the prospect of death bearable? To live daily with the knowledge that we will all die one day, we need to know what makes the living worth the effort. That is the end which the free and responsible search for truth and meaning should serve, to create meaning in the midst of life's confounding reality, to reveal insights that help us to shape the world into the heaven we yearn for. You know, being a minister, you embody an odd social paradox. You both yearn for and dread sociality that isn't church-related. You yearn for that sociality because you miss just being a person, blending in, representing nothing. And you dread that sociality because if you do get outed, your work becomes a thing that can't be unseen. What do? I'm a church minister. And suddenly the temperature drops. What was a freewheeling conversation suddenly becomes constrained and awkward. I have a friend who's a shrink and she reports the same thing. People automatically assume you're judging or analyzing them, and they get guarded and defensive. Lately, I've been getting around this by simply lying. What do? I'm a technical writer. What do? I'm a voice artist. What do? I'm a counselor. None of these are untrue, but they're not the whole truth. In fact, when you get outed as churchy, people clamming up and drifting away is actually one of the better outcomes you can hope for. Once in a while, you get someone who read a book on religion once and will proceed to give you the benefit of their pinhole view with the force of a great revelation. Or you suddenly transform into a flesh and blood trigger for someone who's obviously been made to feel small by some authoritarian clergyman in their past. Years ago, at a dinner party, I was sat near a woman who'd been informed what I really do for a living, and I watched her seethe through two courses before she finally injected this into the conversation. You think you're better than me. People only go to church so they can feel morally superior to everyone else. Well, you don't have to respond to everything, so rather than get drawn into that, I let it go through to the keeper. But it stuck. I thought about what she said. There is no denying there's a lot of what we call virtue signaling among church folk that passes for what Getty calls holy living. We might call it holier-than-thou living, when it's really more about publicly demonstrating how compassionate and virtuous you are, how much higher and above it all your thoughts and actions, how much closer to God or the Spirit, and therefore less impeachable than the average person. My blameless, selfless spiritual life versus your compromised, selfish, secular one. No doubt that can be part of the mix in our often confused intentions and compulsions as we try to build a self-image we can live with. So I thought about why I myself have been a churchgoer, one way or another, for most of my life. Was I really trying to feel superior to my neighbors, more virtuous, more deep and meaningful? If there was another reason, what was it? I thought I'd better be able to articulate one that was both true and plausible. And happily, this occurred to me. I said to her, "Actually, I can honestly say I don't go to church to be better than other people. I go to church so I can be a better person than who I was the last time I went." And it's something I'd not really thought about very carefully until her provocative question. Sometimes things that offend, provoke, or discomfort us can actually be blessings disguised. Blessings in disguise. Like you, I'm sure I'd prefer my blessings undisguised and fully obvious, but that's seldom the way it works, I find. So perhaps you'll forgive me if I poke, prod, and provoke you a bit today. It's to bless you, I promise. I'm not saying that being part of a church community automatically delivers ongoing self-improvement, just like being in a school doesn't necessarily make you smarter, or going to the gym necessarily makes you fitter. You have to be working at it. And places like schools and gyms put you into a context and an environment to support your working at it by offering tools and models and motivation to get you out of your comfort zone. Like going to a gym or a school, church is not going to make you into a better person than you were yesterday if you don't take steps in that direction. Church offers, among other things, moral challenges to prompt the growth of our being. Many of the challenges come from the living, changing context of a community of people bound by some shared intention rather than by accident, who are not your kin, who are friends, but a different sort of friends from your colleagues, your school chums, your neighbors, and so on. In fact, Aristotle said most conventional friendships are a means to an end, either pleasure or usefulness. But the sort of friendship you can have in a place like this, like church, he called the friendship of virtue or the friendship of the good. Such friends are people you like for themselves, people who push you to be a better person. The motivation is that you care for the person themselves, and therefore the relationship is much more stable than the conventional kind. They're possible between two virtuous people who can invest the time needed to create such a bond. Churchgoing is, at its heart, supposed to be about transforming people like you and me, in part, through these intentional relationships. For Unitarians, the seeking of truth and meaning can be enabled through them. We often talk about ourselves as seekers. Other traditions talk about their followers as people, quote, on the path. Both metaphors are talking about the same thing. They assume a journey, movement, steps, a direction at least. But I'm compelled to say that based on my pastoral contact with this church and a reasonably wide range of other Unitarians, what characterizes us is rather less about being active, about active seeking, and more about sticking, about being stuck, and at worst, justifying our stuckness. How many of us can honestly say that we are different, better, more, I don't know, tolerant, accepting, peaceful, altruistic, transformed for the better than we were a year ago, or 10 years ago, or longer? If, looking back at our lives, we struggle to discern personal spiritual growth, that would be concerning. It would mean that a core reason for groups like this to exist is not being met and is being replaced with something that's not meant to be, a means to an end, just a social network to fight loneliness and boredom, let's say, pleasant or useful, as Aristotle said. Maybe the lady at the dinner party was a bit right. We really want to think better of ourselves without actually becoming better. If this talk is beginning to sound like admonishment, like we're doing it all wrong, it's really not, because the good news is that getting stuck at certain stages of your faith or spiritual development is really, really normal. Some thorough and seminal research in this area was done by theologian and professor James Fowler in the early 1980s. His theories of stages of faith development has become a widely accepted and much used guide for understanding the stages most people go through or get stuck in their development. A handy guide to these stages, these six stages, is on the back of your order of service. Those of you who are familiar with other theories of human development from educational psychology, say, like Piaget or Lawrence Kohlberg, will recognize some striking similarities in these stages, and therefore a certain coherence and consistency about how humans develop. Now, most people get through the first four stages of faith development almost without noticing it, almost without meaning to. Notice, though, the question marks after a certain age. Spiritual development beyond simple intellectual maturity is not guaranteed. And Unitarians can have particular sticking points. For example, someone who keeps bashing away at the seven principles or certain key words like agnostic or free thinker is a bit stuck at the literal stage, where a childlike insistence on clear rules and simple definitions are what they most need. Most Unitarians, in my experience, get stuck at stage four, and this is where our reputation for what Getty calls our rampant individualism comes from. Some do get beyond that late adolescent, ain't no one gonna tell me what to think stage, but almost no one anywhere gets to the universalizing stage of blissful, carefree, transcendent, altruistic wholeness. This is for the sage or the rare soul. I'm certain I am not at this stage. If you think you are at this stage, chances are you're not. It's important to note, too, that earlier stages don't vanish. They're always in us and have to be managed within an increasingly complex being as we develop. This is natural. Our personal evolution, like the evolution of species, is mostly rather gradual and, like certain species, can have dead ends. We develop less like the total magical renovation of the caterpillar into the butterfly, and more like an onion, in concentric added layers of awareness that grow over time. Notice that the layers of an onion form around what is essentially a void. There's no central kernel or essence, no core self, but that's another address. Take a few minutes and see if you can see these stages as part of the story of your spiritual journey. What were the big shifts like for you? At what stage do you think you currently mostly sit? How do you think you can seek for more to walk further down the path of spiritual growth? Discuss with someone in a few minutes. There's a wonderful story about us. It's the old story about a woman who goes into a fabric shop and asks the manager for nine meters of black silk. And the manager says, 9 meters of black silk, what are you making? And the woman says, a negligee. And the guy says, 9 meters of black silk is a lot of material for a negligee. Are you sure? And the woman says, oh yes, look, my husband's a Unitarian and he prefers the journey to the destination. Do you relish the journey? Or are you all about having found a comfortable end stage? There's a lovely line in Tennyson's poem Ulysses, often quoted, about finding ongoing higher purpose even in old age. Come, my friends, 'tis not too late to seek a newer world. And the poem ends that they will strive and seek and find and not yield. A curious sentence when you think about it. To strive, to seek, to find, and not to yield. Not yielding when you have found something. Tennyson seems to be saying that never getting stuck at all is the measure of the heroic heart. What can unstick us and move us further down the path toward greater spiritual growth? Well, I hope you're not hoping that if you play your cards right, you'll have a St. Paul knocked off his horse moment, a sudden blinding conversion to a state of grace or insight. Mental events like that share a border with psychosis and schizophrenia and breakdown, I wouldn't wish that on you. They make for great dramatic stories because they're highly exceptional, but the pace of nature, and we humans are a part of the natural world, aren't we, seems slower, more of a walking pace than a sudden leap forward. Natural pace is perhaps less exciting, more about the mundane day-to-day work of staying a course and letting things grow at their own speed. We can learn a lot about spiritual growth from nature, from onions, and in particular from the source of onions, and from so many other living, growing things, a seed. You'll recall maybe Jesus' particular fondness for the story of faith being like a grain of mustard seed, the smallest seed there is, but give it time and treat it right, and it becomes the biggest tree on the estate. There are big things latent within the small seed. If it's one thing Unitarians are traditionally collectively weak on, it's the patience of sticking to ongoing spiritual discipline or practice. We seem to think gearing up for bourgeois politeness on Sundays with maybe some volunteer service thrown in from time to time is about all that's required for spiritual development. Worthy though those things are, they probably won't unstick you from whatever fouler stages you're in. I'm going to offer you four different kinds of seeds today, which we're going to call seeds of spiritual growth. Each comes with a couple suggestions of simple things you can practice to move yourself along the path of growth, parallel to the seed. Choose the one you like or the one you think you most need to develop. Plant and nurture the seed and the practice through patient practice. Let it grow. I'll be back this time next year to see how it and you are going. Don't worry. They're all varieties of natives ready to germinate and grow now, and we've got four choices. Seeds of gratitude. And this might include simple things like keeping an ongoing list of what you're grateful for. Or something as simple as trying to see how long you can go without complaining. An hour, a day, a week. Or something as simple as giving thanks before and or after meals. We also have seeds of compassion. I suggest you try the Metta Karuna meditation every day, and I've provided a link for that. Or simply listening deeply to others without judging or fixing them. We also have seeds of generosity, and this might involve helping strangers whenever possible, or giving to a charity, or doing social justice work or advocacy. And finally, we have seeds of connection. This requires a little imagination. It's something as simple as observing strangers and imagining their inner lives, or imagining and visualizing the network of beings involved in bringing you your food. Plant any of these practices, and I guarantee you, you will feel yourself moving, growing, changing, becoming the people we imagine we can become, the whole and Holy Spirit that is latent deep within us, like the plan of a plant sleeping inside a seed, waiting to come out and flourish. The spiritual journey is not about reaching a state of moral perfection or high status above our fellows. It's about ongoing awakening and awareness. As the theologian Richard Rohr says, you cannot get there. You can only be there, on the path, on the journey. It's not about a destination, but a continuous unfolding until we reach our natural end. If you use or are comfortable with God language, you can think of the stages of your spiritual growth this way. The way is not to God, but the way is with God, at every stage, even the lower ones. What will the seed and you become in a year? Plant it through practice and find out. Let this be our work as a religious community, to encourage one another, to be bold in engaging the world around us, as well as what scares us internally, to give one another the confidence and heart to live as fully as possible. Amen, and go in peace until we meet again. Well, we hope you enjoyed this Expanding Horizons podcast. These podcasts are the intellectual property of the presenter. They can be used only with the express permission and appropriate acknowledgement of the presenter and the podcast used in its entirety. This permission can be obtained by emailing UnitarianSA@bigpond.com. Please feel free to leave a comment or visit us on Facebook or Twitter by searching SA Unitarians.